Welcome to this another great interview, hopefully, with Project Cargo Weekly. And our guest today is the CEO, Mr. Lars Bonnesen of United Heavylift, based in Denmark and Germany. And it's a pleasure to have you here, Lars. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Bo.
As a customary fact in my interviews, I always give the accused, so to speak, a chance to introduce him or herself. And in this case, could you tell our listeners and viewers around the world a little bit about your shipping background leading up to your current position in United Heavylift?
Yeah, thanks, Bo. Well, I've been in this industry for more than 30 years. I come from a small city in Denmark, Korsør, where I trained with Jay Paulsen for 2 years. And after that, I went to Mobile, Alabama, where I stayed also for 2 years as a junior chartering guy doing competitive brokering. From everything from bag beans, bag rice, bag sugar, to project cargoes, etc., etc. And after that, I went to Singapore, where we started a company called Scantrans with my partner Lars Juel and TP Shipping of Norway and Nortrans in Singapore, a Norwegian company. Mainly to be competitive brokers. At the time we started, we were 24 years old, Lars and I. Mm-hmm. We stayed there for 3 years and then we moved the company to Kuala Lumpur, where I stayed for 2 years. And then we got the chance to buy a company here in Næstved, where I'm located today, called Monster Chartering, which was a base for us to come back to Denmark. So we brought Scantrans back to Denmark and had offices around the world. We were operators in the smaller segment of heavy lift up to about 200 tons. And then in 2012, we were bought by Intermarine. Mm-hmm. And I swapped my shares to be a shareholder of Intermarine, and I continued to be the world or European chartering director. And then in 2018, Intermarine was taken over by Seamarine. Mm-hmm. And that was the exit strategy for me, in the sense like the new people came in and, you know, my position were revoked or given to somebody else. And then, yeah, well, I had been there actually for 25 years. So I had my anniversary in August and I left in October. Mm-hmm. So, and then 6 months of gardening leave. And then, you know, when you reach my age, you don't know really what to do. A little bit nervous about the future. Mm-hmm. I knew that I didn't want to just be at home. I have a big farm, so I could actually be a full-time farmer if I wanted to. But that's a spare time job I have. And then Christian Monstedt, also coming here from Næstved, we talked together and, you know, realized that we had to do something, but we didn't really know what to do. Obviously, I had a number of offers of jobs and so on, but I had traveled enough. I didn't want to move abroad anymore. And then Lars Rollner from UHL called me. I've known him for also 30 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And then Christian and I made an agreement that we could buy ourselves into UHL. Mm-hmm. So April 1st, 2019, I started with UHL. And that has been quite a voyage. I thought actually I should be more relaxed and, you know, enjoying to just chartering, which is really what I enjoy doing. But I'm also an entrepreneur and I like to develop. I like to, you know, expand the business, have a lot of focus on the bottom line all the time. So yeah, that's where I am today. I'm sitting in Denmark, but I'm also working out of Germany and I commute every other week to Hamburg to be there. So Yeah.
That's a very interesting story. And certainly, if we say the Danish shipping mafia and some of the names that you mentioned are certainly known to me as well from the past. So it's strange that we have known each other by name all these years, but we actually never met. And this is the first time we do meet, and then it's online and not physical. So we'll have to make an amendment on that later on.
Definitely. Definitely.
What I'd like to ask you a little bit about is United Heavylift. Nobody has avoided to see many of the impressive shipments you've handled in recent times. But one focus area is the renewable energy sector. I believe, tell us a little bit about the strength of United Heavylift in this particular segment. I think you have some very specialized vessels, especially for the blades. Can you enlighten our viewers and listeners about your fleet and what you do and can do in renewable, please?
Well, you can actually distinguish a bit between the onshore and the offshore wind industry. We have a company under the same umbrella called United Wind Logistics with a 50% ownership from Norwegians. And they have these very special deck ships, mainly made for the short sea segment, but they're very quickly in and out of the ports. They can take a lot of cargo. And then we have an agency also in United Heavylift, United Heavy Transport, with the Chinese deck carrier and semi-sub company, where we do a lot of actually transition pieces and pretty much everything for the offshore industry below the water. Then we have what we call our UHL 900 eco-friendly ships, where we are mainly loading, the things above the water, both for the onshore and offshore industry. And in order to do all these kind of things where we have really, you can say, had the upper hand and why we have been able to expand so quickly with a lot of success, that's because Horner, he saw when he started this company that the engineering part is extremely important. So we have a company called United Engineering Solution, which you can say is an in-house but third-party provider of engineering. Everything from naval architects, structural steel engineers, etc., etc. So we have built up a base of customers who rely a lot on us for safe transport. So that's pretty much which has been the part of the success of our company, that we are very, very strong in the engineering part.
I think that's a very smart move, because there's no doubt freight rate is of course important, but when you're talking about mega investments and big projects, freight rates necessarily, well, it doesn't help if you have a cheap freight rate if you don't do the project safely, and then you get a lot of claims. So I think you'll win a lot by having a strong engineering part. I think that's very, very smart. How do you sell your let's say services? Are your customers mainly shippers direct? Are they project freight forwarders? Is it a mixed bag? How do you find your customers? And where do you have your fully owned offices? I noticed that Houston is now on one of your stations as well.
Well, if we take one question at a time, well, yes, we do work with some of the direct, you can say, producers, where we have a very close contact with them. Actually, we are trying also to develop on stacking frames, other things in order to improve the intake, pretty much on every ship type, but obviously also on our own. Because, the windmills are growing pretty much year by year in size. So we are there, already know what they're mainly going to produce in 23 and 24, the sizes. But if we take other things also than wind, we do a lot with forwarders, we do a lot with brokers. When you have a fleet tramping all over the world, then you need to be able to, pretty much pick up rope, soap and dope, as we call it. So yes, we have a large network of people around the world, forwarders, big, small forwarders and so on. And then we are trying to be objective and give everybody the same chance. Obviously, there's always this thing, you know, price is always the factor. And yes, we are also out there with the cutthroat negotiations so we have to be also lean and smart, but it's okay in our organizations to say no thank you to cargos. We don't book just because it's not a turnover driven company. I started saying that we're very focused on the bottom line, and that's I think in order to be able to survive in the long run, you have to really be able to have a focus and control your bottom line. And that's when that brings me further on to your next question about what companies do we have around the world. I have seen myself building up Scantrans, you know, from one office to all of a sudden I think we had more than 20 offices around the world. We even entered into crewing and all other things, you know. We were, like Jude and I, were really entrepreneurs. So a long life has taught me that it's not about having the most ships. It's not about having the most offices. It's about making money and having focus on that all the time. Yeah. Do the right thing over and over again. You know, we start out saying today's quality is tomorrow's recommendation. That has been actually following me all along. Today we have Hamburg, which is the head office of United Heavy Lift or United Shipping Group. Then we have the smaller office here in Denmark where Christian and I are sitting, and we are five here now. We have one in Aarhus, Christine, she's in charge of the wind. And then we have made, then we are setting up Houston. We used to have Intermarine as our agents over there, but they did a deal with our competitors, SAL, so there was a time to find something else. And René Peterson over there is one of my old trainees. I've known him, you know, ever since he started in shipping. And Eileen also comes from Intermarine, have been in the industry for many, many years.
Right.
And then we have also a small company over there with United Heavy Transport, which are doing the semi-subs and deck carriers. Yeah. So the three of them are going to be in Houston. And then we have this joint venture with Ocean 7.
Yes.
And the thing is, you know, both of us are not that big when it comes to the number of ships, but the two of us together have a reasonable size. We were focused on the costing, but it was also important that we were able to attract the right people.
Yeah.
And the right people, they want to have something to do. They want to have access to ships. So with the combined fleet, actually, I think we match each other pretty well. It's very rare that we are competing. And then we have this thing, let the best man win.
Yeah.
We would anyway be competing out there. So we started first Norway, and then right after we started Malaysia, which has been set up. And I think there are now, this is 8 or 9 people in Malaysia. Also with some of the old Scantrans staff, Christian and Rune from Intermarine, and the other people also ex-Intermarines and Sea Marines and so on. Then we have an office in Japan. UHL have their own agent in Korea, UHL Korea, which is like an agency. We have in Beijing also Mr. Lu Liming, which is a UO7 guy. And then, as you know, we have this joint venture with Magisa in Spain.
Okay.
And then we also set up with an agency in Turkey, Duo Shipping down there. It's a Stark and Sachash, also old Intermarine, Sea Marine people. We're trying to be lean. We're trying to find the right people, have them in the right positions. And then we also empower them to take decisions. we are not centralized decision making. Of course, you can say the overall fleet strategy is controlled out of Germany, but the pricing is very much done locally.
Okay, it sounds like you have a good system in place, and of course also based on especially your wide experience in the field, like you say, better be focused and strong instead of being, say, the jack of all trades, but the master of none, right?
Mm.
So yes. I think you certainly bring personally a lot of experience, and with the colleagues that and the names you mentioned here, certainly enough experience to be a success. And of course, you have a global coverage now. I suppose some of your competitors, you just mentioned that you started up in Houston. Do you see that North America can be a major market for you? Are you going to do something more in the future there for the North and South American markets, like you've done, for example, with Africa, with Magis Alliance, or do you plan to run that on, shall we say, on your own?
No, the American market is very difficult for us. You have to be there on a regular basis, like you have BBC very strong over there.
Yeah.
And they've been there for ages and so on. So we will always be third or fourth in line. Yes, we are sending our ships to the Americas, both North and South America,
okay.
On an ad hoc basis, but it's not a regular service we will do. Our office in the US is mainly to cater for the American customers and
okay.
South American customers also. There's very big American EPCs who are dealing all over the world. We want to be very close to them. And then obviously when we get the ships to the American waters, we need to get out of there again.
Mm.
And the ballast hurts.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. May I ask a question? I have noticed since I'm located here in Sweden that you have from time to time ships even coming to the Baltic. Am I correct in assuming that sometimes you're even using the Northern Sea route for some
yes.
of your ships?
That's correct.
Tell our viewers and readers about this route. Can you just, if the ice is open, or let's say it's available to sail, can you just go there, or do you need special permission to sail north of Russia? How much does it save you in transit time and fuel? Tell us a little bit about this very interesting route in the time of global warming.
Yeah, it's not easy. Let's start saying that the Northern Sea Route is not for...
Not for kids.
No, it's not. Certainly not. It's a little bit dangerous. It's you need to know what you're doing.
Mm.
You need to have the right master on board. You need to prepare the ships for it. You need to have the right ships also for it. And yes, there is a saving during the summertime, but there's also a lot of cost. You need to do a lot of initial investment to prepare them for the Northern Sea Route.
Yeah.
And they have just increased the demands to go there. So yes, we do it on a regular basis, actually.
How many days can you, let's say you have a Shanghai to Baltic, the traditional way via the Suez and Shanghai Baltic via Northern Sea Route. How many days can you save using that route?
I don't have it in top of my head, but let's say
a week, maybe 10
days, depending on, you know, the weather up there can be very rough.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful. And, you know, we can, if we really, you know, full throttle, then we can do 15, 16 knots on the USL 900s, which we rarely do, because we are saving fuel on these ships. They're very fuel efficient. And you know how it is, and when you really push it, then you also burn a lot of fuel. but the main thing is here that you're saving the Suez Canal charges.
Right.
It's extremely high. I mean, for our ships, it's like $165,000 for Suez Canal transit. So you can imagine to avoid that makes the calculation a little bit better.
But so as we say, the Egyptians are not so worried about their tourism industry due to COVID. They're more worried about the shipping industry.
Yeah, I think it's a mix, but of course, it's never nice for any countries. You know?
No.
I have a house in Turkey, and I've been there recently, and I see how hard they hit down there, and I feel very sorry for them.
Yeah, it leads me to one of my final questions too, Lars. Has COVID impacted on your business? I mean, some ship owners say it's been happy Hollywood days ever since almost, and they're fully booked, and others say things are delayed. What's the situation for you as a group?
For sure. I mean, everybody have been hit. I mean, it's always difficult because you cannot remember what was the market like 6 months ago or or was it a year ago and so on. I mean, filling up ships is not a problem, Bo. Everybody can fill up the ships. So you can say, yes, we are fully booked. But do we make money out of it? No. That's the next question. Yes, we have been hit for sure. I mean, we have seen ships proceeding to ports and ballast 2 weeks where all of a sudden the ports are closed or they can't get the cargo into the port. We have had so many of these force majeure situations where we are arguing whether it is a force majeure situation or not. We have contracts being delayed, not a month, but all of a sudden 3, 4, 5 months. So yes, of course, there's an impact, and I think it's not correct if people say it's not impacting, because it is.
Yeah.
But having said that, also, of course, now we have the second, you can say, wave coming, and we're trying to prepare ourselves for that. But it's hard because nobody knows. I mean, we see actually 21. We are very comfortable about 21 and 22. We have a number of contracts already in-house, and we're working on others. And I think the strengths we have with the UHL 900, meaning 900 tons lifting capacity, and we also have some P1s with 800 lifting capacity, the semi-subs we have, and the big deck carriers. So we're able actually to give, you can say, the full scope on big projects. So it's you can say from that part can be a one-stop shop, actually. They don't have to go to, you know, different owners and so on.
No. You have a very solid bag of specialist equipment in-house, so to speak, and plus you have the engineering and you have the know-how. I think you have a good product, and that's also what I hear from generally from the market, and you certainly have been noticed since you kind of started up not much more than a year and a half, something like that ago. So seems the future is bright. I want to say once again, Lars, to you that I have been very pleased that you are available to take your time to reply these questions. I want to thank you formally. Thank you.
You're
and welcome. To our viewers and listeners around the world, this has been yet another interview, this time with the CEO of United Heavy Lift, Mr. Lars Bonnesen, an industry veteran in shipping, and we thank him very much. Stay tuned for Project Cargo Weekly's next attack, and we'll keep you informed. Thank you.